My guest today is Bud Shack. He's a West Coast jazz institution, and his alto playing is beyond compare. It's defined by his swinging, crisp, cool, and hip sound. Today we're lucky to have him on the East Coast. How are you?
After that lovely introduction, I'm great.
Well,
thank you.
I knew you were great anyway.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here, Mary. It's
amazing. All these years we haven't met. I don't know what happened.
It's that old New York and Los Angeles, 3,000 miles apart problem, I guess. It's just I never get here very often.
I read where you were with all these great people that I met along the way, like Charlie Barnett.
Ah, yes.
I'm wondering if you were with him as late as the 50s.
No, I was with Charlie's band in 1947 and 48, I think, somewhere around in there.
Then I know they were crazy. I remember being in Columbus, Ohio, and everybody had a cap gun and were shooting under couches and armchairs and spooking little old ladies in the hotel.
Charlie was a crazy man anyway. He was great. He was great to me.
I thought he was a wonderful guy.
One story I always remember is Charlie had his own Cadillac convertible or some big thing that he drove in, but we had the usual band bus. He had hired a guy to be his one of our band boys and carry the drums and things around, and the guy was huge. So Charlie decided that he should start to train him as a boxer. He was going to be his manager and have him be in the boxing ring. And they'd get him off the bus, and he had to do his road work, and we'd follow behind him with the headlights on while he did his road work at 3 o'clock in the morning every night for an hour. It never worked out. He never became a fighter. In fact, I think Charlie fired him a couple of weeks later, but it was hilarious at the time anyway.
Oh, my God, that sounds like Charlie, though.
Yeah.
But then you were with all the big bands, but I vaguely remember Kenton. That must have been in the 40s also.
Yeah, well, that was the other very important part of my, I guess, my apprenticeship or my growing up period. I actually joined the band in December of 1949 when he put together what he called the Innovations in Modern Music Orchestra. It was the orchestra with strings and French horns and tuba and all the saxophone players doubled on woodwinds.
Was that the Neophonic?
The Neophonic was later. That was in the middle 60s.
Oh, okay.
That was essentially the same thing, but that band didn't. The Neophonic band never traveled, and it did not have strings, but it had everything else. But they were both endeavors of Stan's, and he lost money on both of them.
That sounds like him, too.
That's what you get for being a band leader, right?
God, I remember meeting up with the band in Chicago. I think I was still in my green and callow stage, having just arrived in Chicago from England with Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave me a hug, and it almost killed me.
Well, he was 6'5", and he used to look like a stork standing in front of the saxophone section when he was conducting. We'd be looking at our stands, and it stands way up here somewhere.
Was that fun with that band?
Oh, yes. It was a very great learning experience musically, and I made friends on that band that were lasting, and some of them I still am, the guys that are still around, but where I first met Shelly Mann and Shorty Rogers and Art Pepper and Buddy Childers and, I don't know, on and on, a whole bunch of guys that we remained friends for the rest of our lives, or their lives. They're all gone. I'm still here. I don't know how that happened.
I remember Stan and Shelly Mann being on the cover of a Downbeat because Shelly had evidently said something rude about Stan, and Stan was allegedly beating him up. And the photo showed him beating up Shelly Mann on the cover of Downbeat.
lots of silliness went on with those
guys.
Yeah,
lots of silliness. Maybe we should get serious, play a tune.
Oh, I think it'd be a great idea.
Love that. And introduce the two guys that are with you, Martin Wind on bass, Tim Horner on drums, and we're going to do what?
Alone Together.
Okay. Thank you. Well, I have to know how you got started playing the horn. I mean, you didn't just pick up the horn and play. Were you a lone kid, or did you have brothers and sisters?
I had a younger brother who's now an attorney, and he still has no idea what I do for a living. He's questioned it all my life. But I grew up on a farm in Ohio, outside of Dayton, Ohio.
Oh, really?
Really had no contact with music. Nobody in my family was musical. All I had was a little radio with a 2-inch speaker on it, where I used to hear the big bands that are played in here in New York, and the usual thing of having the radio underneath my pillow at night when I'm supposed to be sound asleep listening to the big bands.
I don't know how usual that is, but it sounds like it might be a good thing for you to be doing, because I guess that led you to playing on.
Yes, my first instrument was a clarinet. I got attracted to Artie Shaw, and actually Artie and Benny both. They both had big bands in the mid-30s, and they were very important, and I leaned more toward Artie Shaw than Benny. Strange how many other alto players, especially, that I've talked with felt the same way. I just talked with Lee Konitz recently. It happened with him. It happened with Phil Woods, Art Pepper. We were all attracted to Artie Shaw as youngsters.
But what happened after being under the sheets with the radio? Did you somebody teach you the clarinet?
Yeah, I started studying clarinet, and I went out to the big town, into Dayton, Ohio, to study with a real teacher instead of the band director out at the country town. And then I got my first saxophone when I was 12. First saxophone was a tenor, and I played tenor saxophone up until the time I was with Charlie Barnett's band. And,
was that like your first gig with Charlie Barnett?
That was the first name band. No, I had spent some time working with a college band in the University of North Carolina before I went to Los Angeles, and a band called Johnny Satterfield, which was really very, it's a very important band in the mid-40s. We played all over the South.
Wow.
And that was another extremely great learning period for me.
And from there to Charlie Barnett.
And from there to L.A. and then to Charlie Barnett, yeah.
And from there?
From there to the Stan Kenton Band, then to the Lighthouse All-Stars.
Oh, that's
and
right.
Then to my own quartet and those kind. Then to the studios and on and on and on.
Well, I read somewhere that you had a group with Shelly Mann, a chamber jazz.
Yeah, that was the group we called the L.A. Four with Lorenzo Almeida. And Shelley and Ray Brown and myself in the middle late 70s up through the 80s we kept it together.
I remember that because you recorded several of those, didn't you?
Oh yeah, we had I think 10 or 12 CDs or LPs or whatever we were doing in those days, some kind of device that we put it down on.
And flute?
I did a lot of flute work then. I don't play flutes anymore, but flute seemed very, very important with a group like that. After we broke the group up in the middle 80s, I had a chance to sit back and say, what is it that I've always wanted to do, and how do I get better doing that? And it surfaced that all I ever wanted to be was a jazz alto player, and the best thing I could do to make the alto saxophone better was throw all my flutes away. So I did.
That's funny. So then you formed your own group, I suppose.
Oh, yeah. I started back as a soloist and with my own group. And then I resurrected the Lighthouse All-Stars for a while in the early 90s. It's all kind of various things in the last 20 years or so.
Well, that's a great place. I'm sorry I never did get there.
But a lot of good music did come from there, and a lot of guys that would come from to the West Coast from New York would always come by. Miles and Max Roach and guys like that were always in there sitting in with us.
That would probably be the first place they'd go to see what it was like.
Well, speaking of great music from the Los Angeles area, not only did it come from Lighthouse, but a lot of great music came from the motion pictures that were written out there. And one of the guys that was the most prolific, and one of my most favorite writers was a guy named Johnny Mandel.
Oh, one of my favorites, too.
He most certainly was a jazz guy and came out of the... He even worked with Count Basie's band and a lot of other bands here in New York and then around Los Angeles.
He did?
Yes, he sure did.
I didn't know that.
And then he decided that the best future for him was to get into film writing. So he went to film director's school at UCLA just so he could learn how to communicate with the producers and directors. I've had a little experience with that.
That's probably a special language.
They have their own language, and nobody knows what the hell they're talking about. So he was smart. He went to UCLA for a year learning how to how to talk to those guys.
I think that's funny.
And one of his very first films was The Americanization of Emily, out of which came this lovely, lovely, lovely song called Emily.
Which we could play.
Okay.
Okay, I'd love that. Hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast. Tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Fazioli Pianos, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.